Hi, I'm Carla Wainwright.
And I'm Little Leah.
And welcome to the Radical Sex Witches podcast, where we explore the themes of sexuality, feminism, consciousness, love, healing, ritual, magic, and all things witchy and wonderful.
Hello, all you orgasmic omegatrons. I don't know what that word means. I just made it up. But I'm Little Leah, and with me, as always, is Carla Wainwright. Oh.
I don't know. I had a picture of the Transformers watching that as a cartoon as a kid.
Me too. But it was like transforming into like a crystal boner or something.
Yeah. Orgasmatron.
Pew, pew. Or some metallic titties going. Oh, oh, oh.
Yep.
And the nips come out. Well, we've been here for 5 seconds and we were already in the gutter. So why don't we kick things off? In the possible experiences of pleasure, orgasm probably ranks right up at the top. Oh, yeah. And it's a topic that fascinated humans for centuries, inspiring art, literature, and endless curiosity. But what exactly happens in our bodies and brains when we experience this intensely pleasurable sensation? I'm making a snail trail right now as I read this. Well, here we are to delve into the fascinating world of orgasms, exploring the history of research, the underlying chemistry, and intriguing facts, and ways to apply scientific understanding to improve your sex life.
Are we going to do this whole episode with our O voice?
Orgasm. No. Singing O. That's exactly what I sound like when I come. Orgasm.
For the sake of our listeners, I think we should not do that, but
I think they want it.
Maybe.
Doesn't matter. We're holding you hostage.
That's right. Orgasm. Well, I'm going to try to talk in my most normal voice. I might throw an O voice in there once in a while. Okay, so, you know, we're always starting with the context, the history piece. You know, we've covered a lot of this already, but it's good to review. So, you know, really before the 1900s, there was pretty much limited scientific research on human sexuality. And beliefs that people had about orgasms, they were really rooted in cultural norms and religious teachings. And like I said, we've covered a lot of this in our past episodes, but let's review a little bit of the Western historical perspective on orgasms across different cultures and periods of time. So ancient Greece, we have the ancient Greek philosophers who believed that only men could achieve true pleasure during intercourse because of the seminal vesicle, and that women were merely passive vessels for reproduction. But there were some, like Aristotle, who suggested that women might experience some form of pleasure, but not to the same extent as men. So I'm wondering, like, did they actually witness a woman having an orgasm? Because I don't know how they would think that, but that sounds pretty.
I think they're all in their gay bathhouses, probably maybe. With each other.
Maybe. Well, my pleasure's
better. Doing the Dutch runners.
Then we have the Romans, and they had a more liberal view of sexuality compared to the Greeks, and they thought orgasms were actually really important for both physical and emotional well-being. And the Roman medical texts describe female orgasm as a vital component to conception. And I think that existed for a long time, that you had to have an orgasm in order to conceive.
Why? Man, those poor women that were like, I didn't even come, but here I am knocked up.
Yep, exactly. And some believed that women reached orgasm through penetration alone, but there were others that argued that clitoral stimulation played a key role. That seems pretty progressive for those Romans. Mm-hmm. Then we have the Middle Ages, where everything goes to shit, of course, and Christian doctrine dominated Western society at the time, which of course shaped attitudes towards sex and orgasm. And Christians really viewed sexual pleasure as sinful and should only be focused on procreation within marriage. And so any talk about orgasms were taboo. And so there was really no information regarding female sexual responses because they were just considered to be bad and sinful. And then as things shifted into the Renaissance, the interest in human anatomy grew, and there was an increased exploration of sexual function. And Leonardo da Vinci made several drawings depicting male and female reproductive systems, including the clitoris, which was previously unknown to most scholars. And just a side note, Leonardo da Vinci probably was gay, so we had to leave it to a gay man to...
Nah, I could just see him getting even closer in there to draw all the detail.
Maybe. But despite these advances, orgasm remained a subject of controversy and speculation throughout the era. And then we get into the Enlightenment era, where, you know, the thinkers of the time challenged traditional views on sexuality, and they really advocated for greater personal freedom. And writers like the Marquis de Sade explored the connection between pleasure and power, and he argued that unrestricted sexual expression could lead to social progress. And those ideas, of course, were highly controversial at the time, but they actually laid the groundwork for modern understanding of human sexuality. But then we, you know, go backwards again in Victorian times, where there was all this emphasis on modesty and propriety, and there were strict moral codes governing sexual behavior. But we, of course, know people outside of the conventions of society were doing all kinds of naughty things. And so orgasms were private matters, best kept hidden from public discourse. But there were some medical professionals who began studying human sexuality more systemically during the period of time, but their findings were often censored or suppressed due to societal pressures.
They were still selling minges. What was the guy called with his jacket that Marco dressed up as? The Merkin Man.
The Merkin Man.
And that was to hide all the uglies underneath.
I know.
All their STDs. So they were fucking.
Well, they, and you know, there's some actually super incredible, like Victorian dildos that, you know, they could make actually like squirt liquid and all kinds of stuff. So they were coming up with some super pervy things behind the scenes.
And our modern understanding of orgasms really began in the late 19th century. We talk about this fucker a lot, Sigmund Freud. He was among the first to explore the psychological aspects of orgasms. He believed that it played a central role in the development of personality and mental health. For men, he suggested that orgasm was essential for releasing pent-up sexual energy and relieving tension. He viewed male orgasm as crucial for psychological well-being. For women, he initially proposed the concept of the, in quotation marks, vaginal orgasm as the mature and superior form of orgasm, suggesting that clitoral orgasms were less developed and associated with immaturity. Means he's never touched one. However, later in his career, he revised his views, acknowledging the significance of clitoral stimulation and female sexual pleasure. Maybe it was just a setup all along, right? That he was just like, nope. This is an immature, it's not important. And all these women came to be like, no, but it is. Watch, help me out. And he just like got his pussy game up there.
Maybe. The unknown secret life of Sigmund Freud.
I always think of Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure because they pick up Sigmund Freud.
Yes, they do.
And that's what I picture in my brain every time I hear his name.
Well, and then when I read the line, relieving tension, I think of Frankenfurter from
Rocky Horror Picture Show. Yes. Funny how pop culture has infiltrated our brains in the weirdest ways.
Absolutely.
Even when it comes to an orgasm. In the mid-20th century, William Masters and Virginia Johnson conducted groundbreaking studies on human sexual response using advanced technology like, oh God, EEG and EMG. You want to take a stab at those words? Electromyography. I can say the second one, not the first one.
The first one's electroencephalography. I know, but the acronym's good.
EEG, EEG, orgasm.
And EMG is kind of like OMG.
Yeah, it is.
EMG.
Oh, I think I have to like... My cat just did a bad thing in the room while we're recording here. I don't know if you saw him take off at warp speed. Let's keep going. That's a problem for the end of this episode. Their work led to the development of the four-stage model of human sexual response, which includes excitement, plateau, orgasm, and resolution phases. And the creation of this model provided a more comprehensive understanding of the physical and emotional components involved in achieving orgasm. And we've talked about these guys before on our show, and we've brought up a show that was based off of them called The Masters of Sex, which you should go watch. Fast forward to today, though, more than 50 years after Masters and Johnson conducted their research, we know that the orgasm involves a complex interplay between hormones, neurotransmitters, and other chemical messengers within the body.
Yep. So we're going to get to the science here. And there's a book. It's a fairly recent book. I don't know exactly what year, but I think it's within the last five to 10 years, called The Science of Orgasm. One of the authors is Beverly Whipple. And she provides a detailed step-by-step explanation of the physiological and chemical processes that happen during an orgasm. So step one, arousal. So during sexual activity, the brain releases various neurochemicals that trigger arousal. So we have dopamine, which is a feel-good hormone associated with pleasure and reward, plays a really important role in initiating this process. And then increased blood flow to the genitals also occurs at this stage, leading to engorgement and heightened sensitivity.
Engorgement. Then in step two, we hit the plateau phase. As arousal continues, the body enters the plateau phase, and oxytocin, often referred to as
oxytocin.
Bear with me. This is like 2 weeks straight in a row of work, and I'm an idiot. Oxytocin, often refers to as the love hormone, is released, contributing to feelings of bonding and closeness. Endorphins, natural painkillers, are also produced, helping reduce stress and anxiety while enhancing feelings of happiness. And at this point, muscle tension begins to rise, preparing the body for the big O.
And then we get to the big O, orgasm. So when the body reaches peak arousal, then the orgasm starts. And during this climactic event, the brain undergoes rapid electrical activity, which causes intense sensations and all of those involuntary muscle contractions. So we have the release of oxytocin, dopamine, and endorphins, which further intensifies the experience, creating euphoria, a sense of well-being. In males, ejaculation follows shortly after, and in females, contractions of the uterus and vaginal walls may occur, which provide additional pleasure.
Go into step four, it's the resolution phase. So following orgasm, the body transitions into the resolution phase, and that's muscle tension subsides, heart rate and respiration return to normal, and the release of neurotransmitters slows down. This period of post-climax relaxation allows the body to recover and prepare for future sexual encounters. We're already thinking about going back to Pound Town the second it stops. That's what that sounds like.
Yeah,
I can't wait till the next big orgasm.
Yeah. Yep. It's all very clinical, but I guess it needs to be, you know.
Someone's thinking about why does my body do this out there instead of totally. Just like wham, bam, thank you, man.
Totally. You know, but you're not thinking like, ooh, plateau phase. Ooh, that's an actual phase.
Take me to the plateau phase, baby.
Maybe that's going to be my new dirty talk. Anyway, okay, but you know, what happens, or what about women who are multi-orgasmic? So being multi-orgasmic is when a woman can experience multiple orgasms consecutively without having a significant, what's known as a refractory period. And that's the recovery time needed between orgasms. And it's not totally understood why or what the mechanisms are behind being all multi-orgasmic are, but recent studies suggest that certain physiological and chemical factors play a role in enabling repeated orgasms. So we're going to go through some of these different aspects. So we start with the physiology of being multi-orgasmic. So during sexual arousal, blood flow increases the genitals. We get back to engorgement again and heightened sensitivity. And in multi-orgasmic women, they appear to maintain high levels of arousal even after reaching climax, which allows them to experience subsequent orgasms with minimal downtime. So there's a take-home message here, because research has shown that regular exercise, particularly pelvic floor exercises like Kegel exercises, can improve blood flow and increase sensitivity in the genital area, which can contribute to becoming more multi-orgasmic.
Oh, thanks for the reminder about my Kegels. I just started doing them while we're sitting here. So next is chemistry and the brain. That's my neighbor, the Blaine. The brain plays a critical role in regulating orgasms by releasing various neurochemicals associated with pleasure and reward. And for multi-orgasmic women, it is possible that these chemicals continue to be released at elevated levels following initial orgasm, which sustains a state of heightened arousal and makes additional orgasms more possible. And some researchers think that hormonal levels may account for variations in multi-orgasmic potential. Estrogen, which influences libido and sexual responsiveness, appears to be higher in women who report experiencing multiple orgasms. And testosterone, another hormone linked to sexual desire and function, may also play a role in determining one's ability to reach multiple orgasms.
Mm-hmm. And then finally, we have psychological factors. So we've talked a lot about this on the show, that a woman's attitude towards sex and her self-confidence, of course, impacts her ability for multi-orgasmic experiences. Women who are comfortable exploring their own bodies, communicating openly, they all tend to enjoy more satisfying sexual encounters and find it easier to create an environment that supports multiple orgasms.
Like the Chemical Brothers song, Push the Button.
Oh, wow. I have not thought about the Chemical Brothers in a hot minute.
That's a fucking banger of an album right
yeah,
there.
Yeah, it is. It's dating us just a little bit.
Fuck it. We had good music back in our day we had to walk uphill both ways to school.
To listen to it. To press to put the record player on.
Sorry?
We had to walk both ways up the hill to put the record player on.
Yeah. I'm fine with that. That's better than going to school. That's for sure.
It's true.
And because we're geeking out on the science over here, let's go over what researchers think the evolutionary reasons are for being multi-orgasmic. Man, imagine going to work every day and we're like, we got to figure this out. That's my job. Why are these people multi-orgasmic? So the first one is increased pleasure. Multiple orgasms equal more pleasure. Duh. So increased satisfaction encourages individuals to engage in more frequent and prolonged intimate interactions, ultimately improving their chances of finding a suitable mate and producing offspring. Number two, stronger bonds. So repeated orgasms can help strengthen emotional bonds between partners, fostering trust and intimacy. And then these stronger connections may lead to longer lasting relationships and increased opportunities for reproduction. Everything so far is about reproduction.
Yep.
Wah, not for me. And then number three, what did I just say? Greater fertility. So some research suggests that women who experience multiple orgasms may have higher fertility rates compared to those who do not. This could be because of the release of specific hormones during orgasm, such as prolactin, which promotes ovulation and supports pregnancy.
Mm-hmm. There's a couple more. So enhanced sperm transport. So multiple orgasms facilitate sperm transport in the female reproductive tract, which then increases the likelihood of successful fertilization. And so during ejaculation, of course, semen is propelled through the vagina through rhythmic contractions of the uterus and cervix. And if the contractions occur repeatedly, they may help the sperm get closer to the egg, boosting fertility. So this is all about, like, if we're thinking about from evolution, perpetuating the species, I guess it's all going to be about reproduction here. And then the last one, improve sexual health. So engaging in regular sexual activity, including multiple orgasms, helps to promote overall health and well-being, better physical conditioning, reduced stress levels, and improved immune system functioning are all associated with active sex lives. So individuals who can achieve multiple orgasms may be better equipped to handle the challenges of raising children and ensuring their survival.
Poor Susie over there. She's lucky if she only finishes half an orgasm. Those bears and wolves are going to get her first.
That's right.
And also the brood of kids she has. She's fucked. Yeah. So you want to take your sex life to the next level using science? Just made me think of Revenge of the Nerds. Hair pie. We've got Bush. great idea. So let's finish off on how to apply the scientific knowledge to improve your sex life. According to Beverly Whipple, author of The Science of Orgasm, and the two of us, there are several ways we can optimize our sexual experiences. So first up, let's talk about exercise. Don't make a joke, Leah. Just keep going. You know how they say healthy body, healthy mind? Turns out it is especially true when it comes to sex. Incorporate activities that target your core muscles, like yoga or Pilates, and get your heart pumping with some cardio action. Strength training isn't just looking buff, Carla. It helps improve muscle tone and control, which can make things feel even better between the sheets. So get your dumbbells for your pussy out. Start doing those curls, those curls.
Little tiny vagina weight.
I guess that's what Benoit balls are for, though, right?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And then we tingle when you walk and
tighten. Yoni eggs, too, and you can tie the weights to them, you know, all of that for sure. The next is paying attention to what you put in your mouth, because a balanced diet full of nutrient-rich food does wonders for your libido and overall sexual health. So, of course, you know, all the healthy foods, fresh food, fruits and veggies, good protein sources, healthy fats, stay away from the seed oils, all of which maximize vitamins, minerals and antioxidants. And then, of course, staying hydrated, because if you're dehydrated, and often remember, once you start to feel thirsty, you're already dehydrated, and dehydration
pussy's already dried right out.
Yep. Your pussy's dried out. Dehydration causes dryness down below.
Water. Zip. I can't be normal if my life depended on it. So why don't we tackle stress? Did you know that chronic stress can seriously dampen? I think that's the wrong word here. Your sex drive.
Good point.
Try practicing relaxation techniques like deep breathing exercises, meditation, or yoga. And spending time in nature, pursuing hobbies, and maintaining a healthy work-life balance can also help reduce stress levels and improve your mood.
Mm-hmm. And if you're struggling with any sexual dysfunction issues, we hope that you know you're not alone. So really, we want to encourage anybody who's struggling with this to get support about possible treatments. And sometimes that means medication. Sometimes it means therapy. Sometimes it means just having a good conversation and, you know, talking all the things out. And, you know, sometimes it's just a matter of simple lifestyle changes can make a world of difference. Sometimes you need more. And the important thing is just really to honor yourself and your body and get the help you need.
And of course, communicate. Open dialogue with sexual partners is crucial for establishing trust and intimacy and allows you to open more fully to the experience. So share your desires, boundaries, and preferences so both of you know what feels good and what doesn't. And we mention communication all the time here because it's so important to a great sexual experience. Orgasm. Experience.
And then just one final tip on becoming multi-orgasmic or improving your orgasms is, you know, to really incorporate Kegel exercises, which Leah is still doing, into your daily routine. So this, any type of pelvic floor exercise improves blood flow and sensitivity in the genital area, and that helps increase your chances to become multi-orgasmic if you're not already there. Or maintain that capacity if you are, or even better, start a yoni or jade egg practice. And we tell you all you need to know about that in episode 107 called the yoni egg. So check that episode out. I highly, highly recommend women have a yoni or jade egg practice. It can completely transform your sex life.
I just saw the more you know rainbow fly over. Yeah. Anyways, I'm burnt out and have half of a brain. Carla looks how I feel. We hoped you enjoyed the science of orgasms. And the next time we're back on the Radical Sex Witches, it's not going to be so funny. I'm sure that I'll, you know, still won't be able to keep my mouth shut, but we're going to be talking about Europe's witch trials.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, not a funny topic.
Not a funny topic. I'll try to be behaved for first time in my life. Anyways, I'm little Leah.
And I'm Carla. We are the Radical Sex Witches, and we will see you next time.
Hello, witchy listener. It's Carla here. If you're feeling disconnected from pleasure and unfulfilled in life, reach out to me and let's connect on a free call. I love helping women like you shift to owning your sexual power, reconnecting to your body, and finding your unique radical sex witch within. Go to carlawainwright.com or find my contact info in the show notes. Let's co-create a life for you that is truly turned on.